You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I don't know how long a fortnight is, but I know I'm not going to remember the next one.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is the Social Hour. On today's show, from the Ex-Wife Podcast, Justin and Alicia. And now your host. He's wondering if he'll still understand Oppenheimer if he hasn't seen World War I yet. Deese Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for coming back around for another episode. I know I've been off for a few weeks. I kept saying I would bring you a new episode, and finally, I'm here. Because I finally had guests I wanted to talk to. I've just been busy, and it's been hard to take the time, but some stuff has happened. We've got some guests on we've talked to in the past. We're going to sit down with them in just a second. Before we get to that, as usual, go to deesecomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. We've got some live shows coming up. I'll be in Denton, Texas this Friday at Fry Street Public House. There is a handful of tickets left for that show. That apparently I am big in Denton, and I did not know that because I've never been there. Show is going to be sold out, and then I'll be at the I'll be at the Stomping Ground Comedy Theater in Dallas on Saturday. So if you miss the Denton show, drive 30 minutes south, hit that theater in Dallas. I'm not going to sell that place out, I guarantee it, but I'll be there. Check out all the shows coming up. Social Hour Comedy Showcase every Thursday at the Red Lion in Pasco, Washington. We'll be back at Nick and Norm's Tavern in Hamilton, Ohio, Midland, Texas, Austin, Las Cruces, New Mexico, all kinds of places. So check it out and come see me live. Got new jokes, new stuff, and some new information coming on the special, when it's going to be released and where. So that'll come out in the next couple weeks. Keep your eyes and ears peeled for that. So that's it, guys. We're going to get into with our guests because we had a lot to talk about today. Our guests from the Ex-Wife Podcast, Justin and Alicia. Hey, guys, what's going on?
Hello.
Welcome back to the show. I appreciate you guys taking the time to do this, especially I know you guys just semi-recently got back from San Diego Comic Con, which is always a whirlwind. And probably even more so for you guys because I saw, just kind of following your adventure as I do, and I know you guys did some panels and stuff, so I mean, I've been there as a tourist. I can only imagine as a panelist and presenter what how hectic it is.
I feel like we finally caught up on sleep.
Yeah, just in a couple weeks.
You know, just feel like I'm back into the regular human world, but yeah, it was a wild time.
I saw a couple things. Like I saw something where a panel Justin was doing, and like the how did that happen? Were you guys asked to do something? Did you submit to do something? How did you guys end up doing that? Were you there the whole weekend?
Yeah, we were there. We got there on Wednesday, and we went to preview night on Wednesday, and then we were there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Like open to close, and then going out at night for parties and after things.
Yeah, and then flew home all day on Monday.
Oh my God.
That was bananas.
But the panel, it's actually an annual panel that some friends of ours host that focuses on X-Men fandom, so they'll bring in a cross-section of some podcasters, some artists, some writers, some people in the toy industry, cosplayers, anyone that has some experience and relevance around X-Men to talk about what it's like being a fan, what we love about the franchise, the team, the people, some highlights and various things. So it was really, we knew the right people, and that got us in to the big show, because that was our first time in San Diego, too.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So we basically got the offer of saying, hey, one of you can be on the panel and then the other one will get a guest pass, because like people who are professionals and panelists get a ticket for themselves and then a guest pass.
Yeah.
So because we were going to the D23 Hellfire Gala and I was working on my Rasputin cosplay, that was like my big draw for the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And because Justin has way more X-Men experience than I do, I said, hey, you do the panel and I'll live my best life at the gala. And
she was saying the room, I don't know if you saw the pictures, but the room was far larger than I was expecting. Like I walked into this room feeling fine, confident. I know X-Men, Nightcrawler's my favorite guy, you know. Claremont, he's the man. And then I walk up to this room and it's twice the size of other panel rooms that I had been in that day, and it's full. Like there are about 1,000 people in this room.
Oh my gosh.
And immediately I'm like, okay. Like I do improv, I perform, I'm on stage, but not for that large of a stage with that many people that regularly.
So yeah.
That was, but killed it.
It was crazy. A lot of fun. The room that his panel was in was bigger than the room that the Designing the X-Men panel was in, with like
artists, editors, writers.
With X-Men creators, the comic creators, and people, including Justin, didn't even make it into that panel because of the size of the room. And then his panel was larger.
Jeez.
And full. So that was super cool. And then like after the convention, people out like on the street, because that was on the Sunday, we're like walking back to get to our hotel and people are like, hey man, great panel. And it's like, wow, okay. Out on the road, like outside of the convention.
Yeah. Have you guys seen a spike in the like listenership or anything on your traffic on your website? I don't know if you guys, or like followers on Instagram since then, or was there anything that jumped for you guys for that?
We definitely got a bump, and I know Alicia did too. She was tagged in Marvel's posts.
Oh, wow.
On Instagram. So,
yeah, the
like,
cosplay was great. I saw it. Looked great.
And then definitely a handful of people that reached out and said, hey, I never knew about you guys. Saw you in San Diego. So definitely got a handful of new followers, which is cool. And just the gala episode was probably the episode that came out right after San Diego, and that did big numbers, but I think that was just because the gala.
Sure.
And we did a 2-hour breakdown on
just
the one comic. So,
well, it was a long comic book. So,
We were saying, I think that's probably the longest comic I've read. The longest single issue.
It was very narrative heavy. Not since like a Claremont, peak Claremont, has there been that much narration box in? It was almost like, it was weird, and we'll get into this in a bit, really get into the weeds with that issue, but like it was almost like reading a book, because there was really just so much a description of what was happening and what happened the off panel and stuff, where you're like, oh, this is really, this is a lot of, there's like a word count they had to hit for this book.
Yeah.
It's like heavy.
An insane amount of plot development, character action, and to just essentially pay off on things that have been building months, years ago, and to really fuel what will be the next 6 months or so of X-Men comics.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys get like a peek behind the curtain of things to come? I mean, I saw you guys post some stuff, but that's kind of the press release stuff anyway. Did you guys get any other inside information about things to come?
Not on comics, but Alicia got to watch a teaser trailer for the new cartoon show.
Oh,
it was
nice.
Not a trailer.
It was like clip show.
It was like a chunk of the first episode of X-Men 97.
Wow.
Because at the end of the panel, it was the Designing the X-Men panel, and at the end of the panel, we were out back behind the panel room talking to some people, and a friend of ours said to one of the creators of the show, like, oh, season one looks really good. Like, we thought, oh, these are moments throughout all of season one. And he was like, no, no, that's just episode one.
Oh my.
And we were like, what? Episode one? All that happens?
Yeah, that's a lot.
It was crazy, but it looks really cool, so that's exciting.
When's that coming out?
It's undetermined because of all of the strikes and things and whatnot, but I believe it's, I don't know if the full season's done in production, but
They were saying that it's not completely done, but that it's pretty close to being finished. And
they're already scripting season two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's probably one of the things I'm looking forward to the most. I can only imagine it'll be fun.
We didn't get any sneaks on any comic detail. I mean, we got to see some pencils of some covers and some interior art from Josh Cassara when we were talking to him.
Yeah.
And then we were talking to Jerry Duggan a couple of times and just like, oh man, I'm scared about what's to come. I'm excited, but I'm scared because this was, what, like 4 days before the Hellfire Gala?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's just giggling to himself. you are not ready at all.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Besides, I mean, the obvious, the panels and the cosplay and stuff, what was the best part of SDCC for you guys?
I don't know. I could tell you the worst part.
Okay, that's a great story, too.
Is my proposal for the slogan for San Diego Comic-Con, welcome to San Diego Comic-Con, this line is capped.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many exclusive things that they offer and so little chance to actually get them.
Yeah.
And the idea of, like, I really wanted this Loungefly wallet, and I ended up ordering it after the fact because who knew you could get an exclusive online after the convention.
Yeah, everyone's just reselling them and stuff.
Right.
So. No, from the company.
From Loungefly.
Like, oh, really?
I don't think they're supposed to do that, but they did and I got it. But basically they have you, like, you can't stand still, so they have the line, and the line is capped, and they're like, well, if you want to get in the line, you just keep walking in circles around the booth, and then when we open the line, if you happen to be in the right spot,
weird musical, like, chairs.
Yeah. And after about 45 minutes of circling the booth, I said, you know what, no, I don't want to do that anymore. So that was the worst part. But I don't know, I mean, I always just love getting to see people and meeting people. And I had a couple experiences that I haven't often had or really ever had where someone knew me from Instagram, knew me as Wilder Moves, and just, like, yelled my handle across the convention floor, like, oh my God, I'm so excited to meet you. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, what?
I'm a regular person.
What a great, yeah, that's a nice feeling, right? Like a little fame on this in San Diego there.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And just, like, seeing people and getting to know people and con friends that you never see unless you're there.
I'd say the panels really stuck out. Not even the panel that I was on, but the panels that I got to attend. Because of the writer strike, the actor strike, a lot of the panels got changed and reorganized, and I had never thought that I would get into Hall H. You know, people camp out for that for days beforehand, but I was able to get in, and then I was in the second row for the Spider-Man 2 panel, so the video game that's coming out soon, which was great to just see some footage, hear from them. They're the four creators on the game, and then four of the voice actors, which was really cool. And then we got to see, it was a really, what was it, Into the Slaughterverse?
Oh, yeah.
So House of Slaughter and Something is Killing the Children, James Tynion's indie work with Boom, that just obsessed with. So just being able to get up close to that and to hear him talk about this franchise that he loves and is building.
Wow. Yeah, it's a great, I mean, I used to go to San Diego every year. I haven't been in close to 20 years now, but I used to go every year, and it became a lot too. But I mean, it's fun. It was part of the reason, I mean, I heard this year was much more comic focused than the past few years, because, like, it started becoming where it was more, you know, pop culture, movies, manga, video games, which was, in a sense, keeping it alive, which was good, but also not as much what I, you know, cared about.
Kind of taking the focus.
Yeah, the first day I got interviewed by the news, like, there were people from the news just, like, walking around asking people in cosplay if they could interview them.
Yeah.
And they were asking me, like, oh, how do you feel about coming here now that, like, the strike is happening? Like, is it going to ruin the convention for you? And I was like, I'm here for the comics.
Yeah.
So, not really.
Yeah. We're good. Yeah.
I'm okay.
This is better. This is good.
That's so funny. Yeah. They're like, oh, yeah, this is comics. We forgot.
That's where all the source material comes from.
Was it your first time in San Diego?
Yeah.
I had been in San Diego once as a kid. My parents apparently were married in San Diego. Oh. They eloped in San Diego. We went there. I swore that I had been to San Diego, and I was saying this, and I was describing something. And everybody's like, no, that's San Francisco. And then I called them, and like, no, you definitely were in San Diego.
Okay. Well, yeah.
So beautiful.
San Diego's nice, though. I do like San Diego. Yeah. What was your favorite?
It was great.
I could force myself to get 3 jobs just to afford to live there.
Yeah.
That was amazing. The weather was perfect.
Yeah. It's pretty nice down there. I do love it. The nightlife is good. It's a great spot. I definitely had many adventures in San Diego after nights at the convention. So.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad you guys had fun and enjoyed the convention. You guys gonna go again next year?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
No?
I don't know if we can really afford it.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's part of it.
We are on the East Coast, so the plane travel, the hotels,
Say this, if someone wants to say, here's a free ticket, here's a free hotel, here's some free plane rides, I'll gladly go.
Sure.
I'll be right there.
But it was a good thing. So we had gone to New York Comic Con as our kind of mini honeymoon after we got married. And she didn't even remember that. She said, oh, it'd be cool if we went to San Diego Comic Con for our 5-year anniversary, which is this year.
Oh.
And it just so happened that this was working out. So
there you go.
It was definitely something that we had on the list. It worked out really well in the Hellfire Gala, probably the only in real life Hellfire Gala that they're going to have.
Because
if you've read the issue, you know things are weird.
Yeah, may not happen again.
Yeah, and then just the panel. And so it was a lot of things to be like, okay, no, this is definitely worth going and checking it out and just enjoying what it is. But, our regular yearly con is New York Comic Con with a couple others in the area. But
I can only imagine what the hotel costs are. I know what they were 20 years ago when I went. It was damn near out of control. So I can only imagine what they're charging for, a halfway decent place around there. So,
I mean, we didn't even stay that close. We were
in
our shuttles back and forth. We
found a place that was just outside downtown and had a free shuttle and a free breakfast. Mm-hmm. And I was like, win-win.
Perfect.
We're doing that. Double breakfasts every day and a free shuttle into the con. Let's go.
Yeah. Make it economize.
Yeah.
Yes.
my days back on the road when I was, still entry-level comic and staying at shitty hotels, you'd find a place that had breakfast. If we were staying there for a couple days, we'd like abscond with as much yogurt and sausage and eggs and just put it in the fridge and eat off that for a couple days. You know, it's like sausage for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Here we go.
These are all my meals.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that I can't keep coming down here and bringing stuff back up to my room.
Oh, no. That we did. So, there's lots to talk about with what has happened. I do want to kind of go back and touch on some stuff from the past, because I think the first time we talked, first time you guys were on the show was kind of at the start of Hickman's run. We're kind of near the beginning. And I was, I would say lukewarm not necessarily the status quo. Like, I like the idea, right? The concepts were super interesting to me. I'm not a guy who's afraid of, like, a shakeup. I like, bring it on. The Outback era is my favorite era. Make it weird. I don't care, as long as the stories attached to it are good, I don't care what, it doesn't have to be the school and the blah, 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 blah. There were goods and bads. Overall, I was not really impressed with a lot of the execution. Recently, I went back and I got, someone had like all three of the of Hickman's actual trade, just X-Men run, just the X-Men, 1 through 21, in trade paperbacks for like, it was like $12 for the three of them, And I'm like, okay, I'm going to read these in a vacuum. Just these, none of the other, no X of Swords, no Excalibur, just like Hickman's X-Men run, right?
Yeah.
And in a vacuum, it's much better, I think. I think it's much better in a vacuum, but also I have to say, like, not a lot happens. Like, in his X-Men books, like, the actual X-Men title, not a lot happens. It's a lot of, like, side quests and this. Right. And I'm like, I feel like he had this big, big idea and then started writing the X-Men book and was like, I have no idea what I actually want to do with these characters. Like, it's one of his downfalls is that Hickman is fantastic with world building. Like, his world building is arguably the best in comic books, you know? Like, I don't know if you've ever read East of West, his Ultimate stuff, fantastic. But his execution, he can kind of get mired in the details of the world building, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like each issue, so I remember when we were first on the show, and I think we were ranking our favorites of the line at the time, and I was the only one that had X-Men towards the top, if not the top.
Yeah.
And everyone was just like, what, X-Men? and then afterwards I was like, well, what about issue 4 where they're in the summit with Magneto and Charles and Apocalypse? And Alicia was like, oh, okay, that was great. I didn't realize that was X-Men. But what about like issue 7 when the Crucible and Apocalypse is fighting? Like, that was, each issue is basically like, he builds you a garden in House of X and Powers of 10, and then each issue continues to plant more seeds,
right,
as if he's getting ready to just crank stories out for 10 or so years.
Yeah.
And then kind of
he just
cuts it and runs.
Yeah.
But everybody else gets to play with the world that he helps to create, and then everybody else was stewarding.
I left you breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
Follow it.
I left you this trail. Build what you want from this.
Yeah.
And it was also just interesting to think of how things changed and how things did not materialize. So I think initially I've heard him talk about how he wanted to have team books that were like a Generation X book.
Yeah.
So it would just be that generation in a book, or like a New Mutants book, but it would just be that team doing a thing.
Yeah.
And so that all kind of got combined. And then there was the idea for a Moira book that would go through her lives and just tell you details. There was a book with Sam and Bobby in space doing Shi'ar business. And that's the thing that I wanted all the time. It was there.
Didn't get it.
Yeah.
Teed it up, but it just, it, you know.
When I was in that designing the X-Men panel, they were talking a lot about like the start of Krakoa and the planning behind it all and the visual design of the logos and all of this. But they said that when Hickman came to them to present the idea, that he had 6 notebooks with 6 years of stories ready to go. And they were like, okay, well, let's just
see how
where it goes. So I think like it's interesting to know that he knew, right, like in his mind where he wanted to go with all of these things, and then didn't go there with them.
Yeah.
And then other people took them and
changed
them.
Yeah.
Which is a thing, like, I wonder how that feels to be watching it change and you're like,
I wonder what the disconnect was. Like, I wonder if what, you know, if it was his choice to leave or I know with his contract that his contract is like he has to kind of always do the next big thing. He had to do like 6 big things or something, you know, and it was like Ultimate, Fantastic Four, blah, 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 whatever, all the stuff he did. And like this next re-envisioning, he had to kind of remodel up, you know. So what I wonder what are their disconnect of like that 6 years essentially not getting put out happened.
Right, because that's the part that made me confused about it. You know, he did leave. It was on his, he wanted to go and pursue other things, but Marvel also wanted to add in some other things. I think it was a combination of COVID had him looking at things differently. Mm-hmm. He had launched his business on Substack with Mike and Mike and wanting to pursue more personal projects, but at the same time having a commitment to Marvel to do those big things. And now we see the Ultimate Universe, we see Gods coming out.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, that's the part that I didn't really understand, because if 6 years was the start, you know, we still had a couple more years left.
Yeah.
Papa Hickman, you know, we still had a couple more years to go.
Yeah.
But they the writers, the editorial team, they wanted to stay in that status quo. They wanted to continue to play in the world that they had built, and he wanted to start to turn to what would be the second act.
Right.
Or bring it down, which is probably around where we are now, the end of the second act.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense with, like, kind of, I guess X of Swords is probably, like, the end of the first act, I would say, about, you know, and then you launch into, like, Immortal X-Men, X-Men Red, and stuff like that. Seems like that was probably the second act, which is kind of coming to an end now. I guess maybe the Hellfire Galas are your markers of what's... but yeah, it just seems like it's... I reading just Hickman's X-Men, I was like, okay, you know, there's good moments. It just doesn't seem like he had a handle on these characters or what he wanted to do with the book. It seemed... Like, it seemed like the least important book out of all of them, which is weird because it was the only one with the word X-Men in the title. You know, and when you read it, and then I start, you know, I think about what was happening in X-Factor or X-Force or Hellions or any other book. I'm like, this seems like not like just an afterthought, which is so weird. It should be the main focus, you know. And yeah, like Justin said, there's little things that are like, tie you to other events, but it's like none of this is paying off in this book, which is kind of...
Well, I mean, that's Hickman, right? You know, he is long game guy. He's the I'm gonna plant all these things in your mind, and then 3 years from now I'm gonna tie every single one of them together and blow your mind.
Yeah,
it's just, do you get to that 3 year finish line?
Right, yeah. And like, does the story get there, and do the readers stay?
Right.
You know, are they invested? Because I think that's what always kind of trips me up, is every time we talk about Hickman's run on X-Men, it feels like, because there's not something that feels solid as a through line, I don't remember it. I'm like, what even happened? And then Justin will bring up, oh, this point and that
point.
Well,
in issue 5, when the Children of the Fall.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I remember that as a thing, but I can't connect them all together in my brain, because they feel like literally one issue is one thread, one story, the next issue is the next thread. There's not even a lot of, like, a B plot that goes through, you know?
Well, yeah, because they're each potential future A plots. The only one that really sets up and closes in those first couple of arcs is the New Mutants arc in space that then collides into X-Men with the Brood and the Broodick.
Yeah, there's no, you know, it's not really... Maybe that's a good way of looking at it. There's not really that good, you know, in like TV writing, or even in really should be in comic book writing. You look at guys like Claremont, Lobdell, stuff like that. There's the A plot, B plot, and a C plot, you know, and eventually the A plot goes away. B plot becomes the A plot. C plot becomes the B plot. And there's the new plot that comes, you know, and we don't really see that a lot with Hickman. It's just like, this is happening this issue. This is happening this issue. So yeah, I see what Alicia is saying, because I'd have the same thing where I'm like, you know, we'd see Orcus one issue and then don't see him for a while, then you see him again, but they're not really doing anything. They're just like there, and then they're nothing's really happening. So I'm like, it's been four, I mean, obviously we're going to get to the Hellfire Gala and what happened, but it was like 4 years of like them being like, hey, Orcus is here. They're not really doing anything, but they're kind of around, you know, and you're like, okay, what are you...
Should we be worried?
Yeah.
It's so interesting, because, like, we were just talking about this the other day, how exactly what you're saying, right? Like, oh, Orcus is here, but, like, we don't really have to worry about them because they're not really doing anything.
Yeah.
And they made us be the X-Men, because we were the mutants. We were like, oh, Orcus is there, but, like, whatever. And then in the background, Orcus was doing so many things. Like, we are really feeling now the way that Orcus was playing the long game, because
we didn't get
like those payoffs in throughout. It's because they were saving all of them to throw everything at us at once.
But, and then to counter that was Jerry.
Right.
Right. So Jerry comes in, they relaunch X-Men. Issue 1, he introduces Phalong, he introduces what will become Dr. Stasis, these characters that then roll in and have, like, he has that B-plot throughout the back couple pages with Ben Urich and the story about cracking mutant resurrection.
Yeah.
Even through the Hellfire Gala as what he kind of refers to him as his annual of work. Like, how do you take what you've done in the last year, reinvest, mix it up, and then throw some new energy into the next year, the next team?
Yeah, he definitely brought a new life to the series. I struggled with the main book for a little while when he first took over, and then I think it did get better. I will say that this is another point that kind of struck me with Hickman's run and also Duggan's run, especially with the Hellfire and kind of changing the guard. I feel like we never really got to experience the team as a team ever in the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big thing too. You're like, oh, look, Firestar's on the team, but she doesn't really do anything until obviously the Hellfire. You know, she has a serves a purpose there, but that could have been any character. You know, it didn't have to be her. It just had to be a character. So, like, I wanted to see these characters be people together, because to me, that's my favorite part of the X-Men is the people they are, not what they're doing, but who they are and how that makes them interact together.
Yeah, there was someone on Facebook that asked, like, if you had to pick between character and politics versus action and superpowers, what would you pick? You can only pick one. And character and politics, that's what drives the story. That's the big picture.
Yeah.
You know? Powers and action, that's a page. That's a spread. You know, that's great to look at, great to, you know, punctuate a story. But the big picture, that's the politics. That's the us versus them. That's the seeding in some resentment in characters. It's funny, Hickman's intention with X-Men was never to be like a traditional book, right? It's never a team book. You have no set team. It's really just Cyclops doing things with whoever he needs that day.
Yeah.
And continues that throughout the entire 21 issues that he has.
Yeah, it's kind of his like mini adventure with, you know, he's like this, he goes, I'm going to go check out this other island with Cable. That's like So like, you know, it is interesting. I think about how, because I mean, if this is, who knows how this is going to shake out with, you know, after everything that happened in these last issues, if this kind of era is coming to a close or if there's a way that it kind of keeps going. But I guess, you know, in retrospect, looking back, what do you think like the view of this is going to be in 10 years, in the rearview mirror, like in 20 years? You know, I mean, we look at certain eras of X-Men, like Claremont or Morrison, you know, and different guys and what they did. Hickman is a guy who created a world. His run that he physically wrote is okay, and then it kind of went from there. Is it going to be viewed as Hickman's era? Is it going to be viewed as Krakoa? Is it going to be viewed as good? You know what?
I definitely think it's going to be viewed as like the Krakoan era, because there are so many people who contributed to Krakoa as a whole.
Yeah.
And I honestly think a lot of the reflection is going to come out of what happens over the next few months, because with the way that the gala ended, there were a lot of people who were really upset at the thought of, you know,
death and destruction
in another genocide situation, right? So it really depends on, like, I think what the outcome is.
Sure.
And that will kind of temper how people feel, because I feel like there are some people who are just upset now and they just are like, I don't want to read anymore, and that puts a bad taste in their mouth about the era overall. But I don't know. For me, this is how comics started for me.
Yeah.
So I think for all the people who get into X-Men during the Krakoan era, I think it's going to be a great reflection, because it's going to be like, oh, it was a fresh new start and I didn't feel like an outsider and I was welcomed in. And I don't know. But then there are the people who love the school and love the classics. So I don't know if they love Krakoa.
I think this will definitely be seen as the Krakoan era. I think the writing team has pivoted to that, and especially even before Hickman left, it was kind of like, okay, how do we view this as one larger collaborative? I think what will make it stand out is you think of the five or so years before Krakoa, before House of X, what sticks out in those 5 years, right? You know, other than, you know, you go 10 years back and you have Messiah Complex, yeah, and you know, you have some of the big points, but since Morrison, there hasn't really been a big wow, the X-Men are doing crazy cool things that are new and interesting and different.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was Hickman's start in game, was, hey, we're gonna take it, we're gonna do something entirely different, we're going to add in a lot of new ideas, and we're gonna see how far it goes. I'd be surprised if there's a hard reset and you go back to, you know, none of that happened, especially with how they're tying in other big Marvel properties. The fact that Tony Stark is now actively involved through Emma and through Jerry writing Invincible Iron Man, and you have the Uncanny Avengers, so Steve, and even, you know, the way that it is now feeding out into the larger Marvel universe makes me feel like, okay, I don't think we'll get another hard reboot like that anytime soon.
Yeah.
We might just get another take. Okay, here's where the X-Men are. What's your pitch? You know, what are you going to do with them? They're back to basics, essentially, at the end of the Hellfire Gala. They're hated and feared. Just everything has its stakes that much higher.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Spider-Man annual was so tied to Krakoa and the X-Men that you're like, if you picked that up and you weren't reading any X-Men comics, you might be very confused as to what is happening in the world, because it was so tied to that. That I think that's a really good point. Like, it's so tied to the Marvel universe in general that I think that's going to have a lasting impact.
Unless they're going to just turn it off and turn it back on again, which I don't think they're going to do. You know?
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, for anyone listening who doesn't understand what we're talking about, we'll just say, you know, spoiler alert, in the Hellfire Gala, you know, everyone dies, basically. It's like the Alamo. Everyone dies. You know, there are a couple people left, a couple mutants left. Xavier, Rogue, Kitty Pryde, Shadow Cat. I don't know who forgot that they spelled Shadow Cat with a C before, not a K. That's a weird sticking point for me.
That note from Ogun.
Yeah.
I know they're intentionally changing it to a K now, but I don't know why they didn't catch that. Like, it used to be a C.
Yeah, yeah. I get her being like, it makes, in my head, I'm like, oh, that actually makes more sense with her name being Catherine with a K. Like, that makes more sense, but it was not that before, and there's...
Right.
Anyway, you know, big massacre on Krakoa. Krakoa's gone. Mutants are on the run. And it's really... Yeah, like you said, Justin, I don't see him going back to that, because that really invalidates a lot of that story and what happened. It will be interesting to see what the next kind of status quo is, because, you know, you can't just go back to the school. I feel like that's just that's like a safety net. You got to do something. So what's the next?
And that school is run down now.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, you visibly see it in X-Men 25, the issue after the gala, and, you know, they've kind of built it up that it is in decay. It's been left on the shelf and not been done with.
I mean, just to be clear, we're on the side of not everyone is dead. I firmly believe that they are somewhere else, that they went through those gates and they did not die. Charles just cannot access them.
Yeah.
I'm sticking to it. Until I see the bodies, I don't believe it.
Yeah. And even the bodies you saw, I mean, they'll be back.
The fact that, you know, Iceman and Jean Grey die in the gala, and then they each have miniseries in the fall of X.
Sure.
So, okay, something's up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... it is interesting. I feel like there's got to be... I think they're like trying to make it seem like the stakes are raised real high right now. I think we're going to get a much softer landing spot than they're making us think, where there's going to be something that's brings most of these mutants back. Like the kind of decimation era destitute of the mutant population doesn't seem like the best answer either, but
right. Well, especially, you know, the metaphor being mutants are all marginalized people and then you're going to repeatedly genocide them.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a big thing for your readers. Like, who was excited about all of your favorite people dying over and over again?
Yeah.
Right. Let me find a group of people that I identify with and I see myself in, and then let me watch them be murdered all the time.
Right.
Doesn't feel great.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're like, this man, why do I read this? What's happening? you know, and right when they bring Dazzler back as an X-Men, they kill her. One of my favorites.
Well, so disappointing to have that wonderful team and then just lose them all instantly.
Yeah.
Especially that team where, you know, everybody for the first couple of rosters had been saying, okay, you know, it's cool, these are great. It's very white, it's very straight, it's very, you know, not representative of the vast majority of mutants that you have in your toolbox to be able to play with. Then you get that team, and then they're brutally murdered on the next page. And that just feels like kind of a slap, but also, I don't know, like those mutants are dead.
Those mutants are dead.
Everybody that went to the gate, they might be someplace else, but those mutants, they're not alive.
They look pretty exploded.
Yeah. Bits everywhere.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a ballsy move on Duggan and Marvel's part to do that. Again, I mean, eventually they'll all come back in one whatever, you know, I mean. There was definitely a lot of deaths. So, you know, moving forward, it just makes me wonder, you know, so there's this on the run, but... You know, with this connection with the Avengers, they're not really on the run from the law. They're more really just on the run from humankind.
Right.
But because, I mean, I guess the, you know, technically the law, but also the Avengers are like, hey, we're cool. So, you know, you got an in.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, Orcus is positioning themselves as anti-superpowers, regardless of. You know, mutants, definitely mutant first, turning everybody against the mutants and trying to decimate them, however successful they are, we'll see. But then also associating with that, you know, Fei Long having specific beef with Tony, I can't remember what it was. There was an issue, I think it was Invincible Iron Man, where one of the Sentinels had Johnny Storm as his next target.
Oh, yeah.
They are making a move on superpowers at large.
Yeah.
And just trying to destabilize that community and be the only power in charge so that they can take over and do whatever else they want to do.
Yeah, it's really like more a battle against Orcus and Orcus propaganda. And
right.
Like the way that they're infusing their thoughts and perceptions of the mutant race onto the human, the everyday human, and like the way they're twisting the truth. And I think that's what's so cool about the comics is that they're always tying to things in our real worlds that are super relevant, and this idea of like the media's portrayal of things or propaganda in general and how that really shapes people's opinions of other groups. And I like that that's sort of where their focus is, and I think that the writers are really sensitive to how that connects to the world, which is why I don't think everyone's dead. Like, I just feel
there's something out there.
Not be the right move.
I have a theory that especially with, because I was a little unclear on Mother Righteous took Krakoa in like a thing, like a bubble.
She took a part of Krakoa. So there are multiple sets of islands. The main island that all the mutants were living in did not get stolen.
Okay.
But the other, I think the Pacific Archipelago, that is what she took.
So I have a theory though. I think that because Xavier is still alive and he was left on Krakoa kind of alone and broken. I think the next villain of the X-Men is going to be Xavier. I think you're going to see him extremely radicalized from this trauma and stepping into like Silver Age Magneto villainy, where he's just like, he is just like, there is no, maybe, you know, I don't know if it's going to tie in with any of the Onslaught stuff they brought back over throughout this, but I think that, and honestly, I think that would be the most fun thing if they turned him into just a true irredeemable villain at this point, like completely radicalized by this, like he just broken, can't take it anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, he put his trust in these humans with their ultimatum. He said, you know, I am doing this for my dream, essentially.
Yeah.
I'm putting the lives of these humans ahead of the safety of my humans. That ended up being what it was, but I don't think he knew that that's what was going to happen.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see that happen, because I think that in the grand scheme of things, you know, he, for his character development, needs to think that everyone's dead and needs to have that feeling. So I think that him taking a turn, and there's been some like preview pages that come out with like him all like grizzled and like he's really losing it. I would love that. I would love to see him be a person that I could hate for more than just my own personal reasons and for the comics to give me real reasons.
Yeah, just because he's a bad father figure.
He's just not a great guy, but that's okay.
I'm going to teach you a lesson by faking my death again.
I'm going to go in your mind, but I'm going to say it's wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's kind of my, and it's based on nothing but feeling and also wanting it to happen. But just given where he was left and where the situation's kind of status quo is left, I could see him being just done. You know, Magneto died, his whole dream, like literally the utopia they built that was going to be perfect is stripped away. And at this point he's like, I've done this dream a million different ways and it does not work.
Well, then that also sets up Cyclops, who has now lost the use of his legs, who has now, you know, been brought down to this other point. Could he be the next version of Xavier that likely would never embrace as much of the dream, but still trying to find some way of keeping a foothold on Earth, because that was the point that was brought up earlier, I think in what, issue 23 or 24?
Yeah, between him and Jean.
About him and Jean and not wanting to leave their place on Earth and be essentially forced out to Morocco.
Yeah. The side note, because I couldn't figure it out and didn't remember when it happened or why. Why did he change back to his 90s costume? It just happened. And then he just kept happening. I'm like,
what? We don't know.
There's in canon no reasons about it. It's just Josh loves the 90s outfit.
So I didn't miss something. Okay.
No, it's just Josh was like, I love him in his 90s outfit. Can I do this? And that was something that Hickman had introduced in the early issues of, okay, well, you're all living here. You have the full continuity. Like, anybody can wear whatever costume they want.
Yeah.
Just, you know, if you're going to make something new, definitely run that by. But if there's something that exists in their catalog, you can put them in that. So there was, you know, Magneto in one of the issues of the Fantastic Four and the X-Men, he's wearing his giant M jumpsuit from Uncanny X-Men 200.
Yeah, like New Mutants era stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, like there are a handful of other times. I think Cyclops in one issue of X-Men, he's wearing his X-Factor uniform. Mm. And Jean is wearing hers as well. Context, no reason, no explanation. Just, hey, I want to put this on today.
That's that issue Brett Booth drew, like number 20, number 19 or 20 of the original, of Hickman's run.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that too. It's so funny because, like, I'm like, it just happened. And I thought, I'm like, did I just breeze over a comic? Because sometimes I'll be reading and I like maybe don't pay attention as much on on a word balloon or like a narrative thing, or I don't always read the text pages, and I'm like, maybe it explained it, and then it just kept happening. And the funny thing is, like, I think the Krakoan era Cyclops costume is arguably one of his best ones he's ever had. So yeah, I'm like, now we're going back to this, like, the underwear over the pants. Like, come on, what are we doing here?
But, couches, that's what it's about.
Yeah. Okay, so I didn't miss anything. It just was, okay, I'm not, all right. Well, that makes me feel a little better. I thought I was, like, just completely...
Everyone that I've talked to is like, what's going on? What is this? Why is this happening? And it's just because of an artistic choice.
Yeah.
I just want to draw it, and there it goes.
All right, there it is. I wish there would have at least been a line of dialogue where someone said something, he's like, I just thought, the only thing I'd clean today, or something. And you're like, okay.
And part of, we talked about this on an episode a couple weeks ago, is he reconnecting to those glory days of being on the X-Men? There was the potential of Jean essentially giving him an ultimatum of, you either come with me and we work on this, or you leave the X-Men. So is this him, you know, being his blue team captain guy, living out the glory days of, like, no, we're X-Men, we do the things that we need to do, we fight for people and we fight for mutants. And
interesting. Yeah, that's a good thought. That does make, I mean, it, I would like to think that they put that much thought into it. Hopefully they did. I don't know, but hopefully they did, because that is a nice thought. I got to ask too, what, again, we're going to be a little scattershot here. What's your feelings on the Miss Marvel as a mutant thing?
I really love it.
Okay.
I like Miss Marvel as a character, so I love it because I primarily read X books, so getting her in X books seems cool to me. I'm excited about it. And I mean, I think that it was a bit of a roller coaster to get there.
Yes.
Maybe not a roller coaster that we needed.
Right.
But I am see where it goes. Like, I'm excited about it. I don't think it does any detriment to her character, and it puts her in books I want to read. I think, you know, there are feelings about killing her and immediately bringing her back and all of that, but I'm here for it. I like it.
Yeah.
And her new costume is great.
Yeah. Yes, I'll agree with you there. Sorry, Justin, go ahead. What about you? What are your thoughts on?
I don't have any big feelings against it. I don't have any big feelings for it. I am interested in what they're going to do with it. So if you're going to make her a mutant, I want to see you do something with that. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that, okay, now she's emboldened in the mutant cause. I think that's great. I know that she was intended to be a mutant initially, but it was at a time where they weren't introducing new mutants because of the whole Fox deal.
So
the one thing that I think is a detriment or a loss to fans is she was probably the highest profile and most well-known Inhuman. Mm. And to essentially, I don't know, they say that you don't lose that you're both an Inhuman and a mutant, but I think that it does undercut her representation of the Inhumans as a Marvel franchise, as a Marvel team. I have no deep history or connection to Ms. Marvel. I've loved the show. I liked every instance that she's appeared. As someone that's been reading Zeb's Amazing Spider-Man, I felt like it kind of came out of nowhere in there.
Yeah.
She was loosely seated as an intern at Oscorp because she was trying to do the hero thing and keep an eye on Norman, which was great. And then the hero sacrifice that she went through, that was her untimely death, that I felt like that was a big shock, but then also it landed in a very uncomfortable, odd way because it got spoiled like 2 weeks before the issue came out. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's upset. You know, the fact you have like the one prominent Muslim character who is now dead and all these things, and I would just be interested to see what they do with that. I've liked her being in X-Men 25 so far, and I'm interested in the miniseries that she has coming up. I love Carlos Gomez's art, so to see him take a turn at giving her that new costume, here for that. Just curious as to, like, why?
Like, what's her mutant power going to be? Is she going to be able to access it? And how is it important to the future of mutant kind? I feel like that's what's the key, right? Like, why are you making her a mutant unless it plays some kind of key role?
If it's just to tie to the MCU, get out of here. Don't do that.
Yeah.
If there's a specific story reason that you're going to explore with her being a mutant, I'm here for it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that's a really good point about the kind of invalidating her Inhuman thing, because I think moving forward, she's just going to be thought of as a mutant character. And right. I think that does two things. It kind of plays down, it makes the Inhumans even more irrelevant. And it also kind of makes her more irrelevant. Because like right. you said, when she was an Inhuman, she was the most well-known, prominent, put out there Inhuman. As a mutant, she's in a sea of mutants that are very popular, and you kind of are going to get mired in that and a little lost, right. which is unfortunate because of how much uniqueness she had as a young, strong woman, a Muslim, and all these other features in her as a character that were more important. So it feels like she's just going to be like, I'm kind of a background-ish main character, side character as a mutant now. Hey, right. And you're like, oh man, you were so much more as you were before, you know?
Right. I just can't see her having an ongoing as a solo, as a mutant.
Yeah.
You know, like, as part of the X line that already supports a handful of other solo characters having their run. But to Alicia's point, I'm excited that I get to read more Ms. Marvel
sure.
because I do love her personality. I do think that she is the next generation Peter Parker, kind of the quirky teenager that doesn't know what they're doing but wants to make odd comments as they're fighting and saving the world. I love that. I'm here for it. Tell me why.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I didn't really think about what y'all are saying about her sort of like fading into the mass mutant existence and not really being the individual that she was before.
Yeah.
But I wonder if because she has a strong fan base and people, you know, are drawn to her as Ms. Marvel, as an individual, if they'll still do something with that, maybe not like necessarily in the X line, but as another...
I don't know. I feel like... So, we've talked to Jordan.
Yeah.
At San Diego. Jordan D. White, the senior editor of X-Men, and we asked him, and he said, yeah, she's a part of the X line now. Like, we are now managing or shepherding her continuity, so... I don't know. It's an interesting point. Like, how does she have, with especially this very recent in the now splash of becoming a mutant, how do you then have a solo unconnected to the mutant story?
Yeah.
Especially when she was so embedded in the Marvel Universe, not tied to mutant chronology
right.
at all. The it just reminds, you know, I mean, this is somewhat analogous, but... you know, like a character like Longshot, who was this, you know, they put out this miniseries and then they were going to give an ongoing series and he was like his own character. Then they're like, well, we got to do something with him. So they gave him to the X-Men to put him in a holding pattern for a while.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of faded into obscurity. And like, it just makes me feel, I just hope that they, you know, that doesn't happen with this.
Yeah.
But I think you're probably more accurate when you say, realistically, it's sad to say, I think they just did it to tie it in with the MCU as best as possible, which is unfortunate that they feel the need to do that. Or like Alicia said, the way they did it was a roller coaster that did not need to happen at all. It was completely, and like I saw through it immediately. I'm like, okay, so they're gonna kill Ms. Marvel when a new movie is coming out. So let me guess, Ms. Marvel's gonna get a ton of press because she's dying. Well, that'll draw people to the movie. Then they're gonna obviously immediately resurrect her because she's not gonna be dead when the movie comes out.
Right.
And then you tie it into the X thing, and it's like, it seems just like a marketing machine instead of any real organic reason.
It's interesting because they did essentially the same thing with Scarlet Witch and Doctor Strange for the Multiverse of Madness.
Right.
Scarlet Witch died at the end of the first Hellfire Gala. Doctor Strange had his own Death of Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Both of them are fine.
Okay, but let's just pause for a moment and just say, if it is to be in line with the MCU, then know that, I mean, it was sort of teased at the end of her show, right? That she was a mutant. But that's just one step closer to mutants in the MCU.
That is true.
So look at the positives here, people.
Yeah. Well, then the question is, when the X-Men movie comes out, is Miss Marvel in the X-Men movie?
Right.
That's so, a great question.
You know,
I don't know.
Especially
all the diehards that want more classic adaptations, you know, the people that are asking for or wanting to see something that is an 05 rendition or something that is a giant size start or something that is more in line with the stories that people grew up on in some way. I don't know how you do it, whether you do it kind of time displaced or you do it with TV shows or...
I don't want that.
Yeah.
Just give me Emma Frost.
Yeah. The Hellfire. You just want the Hellfire Club. I've got a movie pitch for you guys for X-Men. This is what I would love to see in the X. Because here's what I would love to see the Marvel Universe in general, the MCU in general, do. I think they've run into a problem where all their movies shoot right down the middle, meaning they don't. There's not. Have you ever heard the saying? It's neither fish nor fowl. Like, it just kind of is, you know? It's like not, they don't pick a direction and go hard into it, you know? Like, when they did the New Mutants movie and they're like, we're going to do, like, they're like, it's going to be a horror movie. And then you watch it and you're like, it's not really a horror movie and it's not really, so it doesn't, it kind of becomes nothing, you know? So I wish they would really lean into genre movies with their, like they do with comics. So, like, I think they should do an X-Men movie that's like, make it part... Like a little bit of, you know, you remember the movie The Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Running Man surviving the game mixed with a little bit of Saw meets the X-Men. And they're like, it's a Mojo is the villain, though. It's like Mojo versus the like TV show. or do like a space one where it's like Alien, but with the Brood and the X-Men. Like lean into these genres and really... make it a dark, dark movie. Like, you can still do your more bubbly version, but there's room for these darker adult ones too.
So I would love a horror fueled Brood movie. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I like a dark, gritty movie, so I'm here for that.
And then you think about like Logan, the movie Logan,
yeah,
and
that
how
great.
That embraced Westerns.
Yeah, yeah.
And the idea of Logan being kind of this cowboy samurai. And how you could actually, I remember when we saw that, when we left the theater, Alicia was like, I get what they were trying to do with the other two movies now. Like this feels like this was Wolverine that they wanted to show you. This is the struggling internally, the brooding, the forced responsibility, but also Grumble Gus kind of guy that he is to really just berserk. And go off with the claws. Like,
yeah.
Let's watch Logan.
Yeah,
and that was such a good movie because they just kind of let it happen. They, you know, we can make an R-rated movie. It can be what it needs to be, you know. Not that you can't make a PG or PG-13 Captain America movie, but you can make something that, you know, starts to... Because you just start shooting down the middle. You're like, it's fine. It's fine. It hits all the markers, but you're not doing anything... exciting or different. You just want to make sure nobody complains and nobody's...
Which is impossible.
Yeah, it's
everybody's
like...
going to complain about something.
It's like making a PG-13 Maximum Carnage adaptation.
Yeah.
What? How are you going to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great. So, we got a little time left. Hey, I want to ask you guys about some of the other books in the X-Men line because it's kind of been in flux. And, you know, there's more stuff coming. But it looks like Immortal X-Men and X-Men Red are still on the docket moving forward. And this morning I read the latest X-Men Red, number 13, I think it was. And it made me realize, like, where is this book with the other X-Men books? Because there's like no reference to anything else. It's just, and I'm sure it'll hit, you know, it'll impact, somehow it's going to come to that book.
Right.
But what, you know, how do these other X-Men just kind of hanging out on this planet, how does that stand with the rest of the universe, you know, or the rest of the line?
Well, they have sort of separated themselves, right? Like, Araka has decided they're not really interested in Krakoa and what Krakoa has going on, and they have their own council, the Great Ring, and they're sort of like working through their own thing, where since Storm came to be on their council, they've sort of shifted. They used to be a people only fueled by war, and now they're trying to like find a new identity for themselves. And then you have Genesis coming in saying like, what the heck did you do to my people?
Yeah.
And my planet. And so they kind of, they're there, they exist. It's more that they are referenced in the other books,
yes,
as being distant than they are referencing the other books. So
yeah,
they exist, and the rest of Krakoa and the X universe like knows they exist and comments on them sort of being there, doing their own thing, and often
Civil
is
War.
Displeased with the yeah fact that Storm has sort of chosen Arako over Krakoa, but they themselves are an entity of their own, which I is amazing. Like, X-Men Red is always one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
And I like that. Like, it exists within the world that's been created, but it doesn't have to be tied to the events. But I think now with what's happened after the gala and this sort of hint at, oh, you know, especially refugees sort of making their way there, I think
right
that there will be some sort of collision of those things. But
it's interesting that the line essentially alienated them with the elimination of gate travel, right?
Yeah.
So the only way to get to or from Arako is to use space travel, spaceships, and that's kind of in chaos because of, as we see in X-Men 25, Civil War has broken out. Genesis and her people have butted up against Storm and whoever she's leading as part of this resistance, and it's just madness in the streets. So I see it as this other, as you said, Alicia, referenced in other books. You know, they say, oh, there's civil war happening on Arako. We're relocating all the mutants to Mars because they won't call it Arako. And they're basically just throwing them there. But then you have Shadowcat appearing there, trying to do some recon, trying to do some intel on who's there, what's our strength, what's the situation, how might that eventually... I don't know. I think that Al has a very interesting versus with Storm and Genesis.
Yeah.
And personally, I love the fact that it's separated, that we get to see that play out. Because we have so many characters, so much potential for new characters, because they're all just unnamed Omega war-hardened badasses. So just throw down a couple new characters. You have, I don't even know who's alive up there, right? You have Storm, you know that. I don't know what happened to Bobby.
Right.
I don't know who else.
Birdo.
Yeah, I mean, who went to the... Who of those characters went to the gala? Who didn't? I mean, who died
right
off panel? You know. Yeah.
It's cool, though, because, you know, when the stuff with Genesis started happening in the books, I was worried. I was like, this whole Genesis war is coming up, but then we know the gala is looming over us, and we know everything's going to, you know, explode at the gala. So are they going to rush this story of the Genesis War? Like, is that going to just be wrapped up? And then to find out that that continues on and it's its own thing, then
yeah,
we didn't kind of have to rush through that. I'm actually really excited to be able to tell these two what seem like really epic stories side by side instead of only getting one or
yeah
the other.
And to see how it ties back in. Because
yeah
I'd imagine that there's a way that Arako plays a key role in whatever happens at the end of the fall or at the start of whatever comes next.
Right, because
yeah
you know Apocalypse is connected because Apocalypse and Genesis are connected. And then there's like the tease of this, the new X-Men book that's in the Age of Apocalypse, like
yeah
font.
Yeah.
So you're like, ooh, what does that mean? What's happening there?
Is Apocalypse maybe starting his own X-Men? Is that, you know,
yeah
who is that?
I
by the
I don't know if you read the Horsemen of Apocalypse one-shot, the Before
yeah
the Fall,
mm-hmm,
right? So at the end, he's basically saying to that Damon that I need to go and recruit my own team. I need
yeah
to find some people myself to bring on and to bring into this fight. And, you know, whenever that happens, when we were talking about it last, I was kind of thrown off because I want Apocalypse to come back now and to throw down and say, like, hey, what'd you do? You ruined my island. Like, what's going on? But I do think that there's the potential that he's out on this side quest assembling his team to then come in and save the day after
yeah
the fall.
Yeah, it's the thing I like about what's happening now too is that it seems that the books are kind of getting a little more autonomy. There was a time in where it was just so jumbled where you were, if you weren't reading everything, it was, you weren't getting the whole story, and it was so much to digest to read it all. So I like that this seems like, you know, X-Force is going over here, Wolverine's doing his own thing, we've got X-Men Red is kind of on an island, X-Men and Immortal X, who knows what's going to happen in Immortal X-Men now, where the, what the focus of that book's going to be.
Now you can have a council book without a council.
What's that going to, I don't even know what that that book will be about now. So it's nice to have a little more autonomy and see, I hope that moving forward we see more of that where it's not so hinged on each other, where you can, you know, not feel like you're just in this big sprawling thing and it's all moving towards an event. You're getting real storylines going out, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see. I think we're probably closing on time here, guys. Let's do this. Any bold predictions coming up, and what are you looking forward to most with the line?
Dark X-Men is the one that has my attention in terms of the lineup and the concept.
Yeah, same. Anything with Havok, like, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. And just that team, Maddie being a lead character in it, having some kind of, you know, having read The Amazing Spider-Man annual, knowing that there is some friction with all of the refugees that are now trying to come to the Limbo Tower to claim asylum from the persecution of the humans. In terms of bold predictions, I mean, we were pretty hardcore on the "they're not dead" thump speech, and I feel like that's definitely going to come up. And I would love to just see just chaos, just all out war. It's the fact that how during all the years that have been from the start of Krakoa, everybody's saying how we're getting soft, we're not training, we're not doing the things that we need to for the upcoming war. And then the war happens, and it's like, yeah, you all were right. Bishop, Wolverine, you got it. You caught us.
Yeah.
And so now I want to see what that does to the mutants as a people to then become the battle-hardened people that they need to be. To basically embrace Arako.
Yeah.
And to be ready for the upcoming war.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about the X-Men Underground that seems to be building, and what Emma's building. Like, where is she going? Who is she making connections with, like, the connection she's making with Kingpin, the connection she's making with Tony. And honestly, like, I am anti-Emma and Tony in love. I'll just say that, okay? It's a political move.
Yeah.
Everyone can say what they want, but I'll be in denial until they, like, make it.
What's that?
Really, like, some of my favorite characters are getting to be their baddest selves right now, and that's really exciting to me. Like, everything that's happening with Kate as Shadowcat and what's happening with Emma, and I'm really interested to see, like, the gritty X-Men, you know? The gritty, dark underground, like, we're doing it, we're living in the shadows, we're not, you know, show no mercy kind of...
Kill no man?
Yeah. I'm really excited for that. And as far as, like, big predictions go, I don't know. I just think that there are a couple of mutants who are hidden away, Doug and Manifold specifically, are underground somewhere. And I don't necessarily have a prediction. I'm just really excited to see what that turns into.
Yeah, or why Krakoa stole Doug, hit him. What did he know, and why, and how that pans out. That is an interesting thing that happened. We'll see. I guess with kind of this era, essentially, as far as we know, kind of coming to a soft close, you know, maybe not a full close yet. I will say, looking back, I think there's still so much so much unrealized potential that never, so many things with the, you know, Kurt's thoughts of the implication of the resurrection and the soul and the religious aspect. That stuff was so interesting that Cy Spurrier tried desperately to do several series and play up, and none of it ever landed or really really came to fruition.
It started as, you know, I'm going to make a mutant religion, and then it turned into, I think we're cops now. You know? Just like brain cops somehow.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because, again, kind of we started this conversation this way, this episode, and probably, again, the first time you guys were on the show, of like, there's so much potential in this setup, and it's, although at the end of it, I'm probably looking back on it more favorably than I was the majority of the time it was happening. But I think they missed so much of what they could have done to really, really make this a much, much better era in general.
It's interesting because when you said, you know, I'm looking back at it more favorably than I was while reading it, I'm like, I think that's what's going to be its legacy, is that people are going to look back on it and be like, oh, it was better than I thought.
Yeah.
You know, I was really hard on it during it, but I actually really enjoyed it. So, I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, I think the first, kind of, we'll say the first act of it, as we talked earlier, where Hickman and kind of that first era through X of Swords, is probably the part I like the least. And then it got better after that, even though Hellions was gone and that was my favorite book.
I know.
Yeah.
But I think the X-Force Wolverine stuff really saved it for me. Like, Percy is doing amazing things.
Yes.
Although I still don't love what he did to Beast. I don't think it makes sense, but I'll go along with the ride because he's doing it so well. And again, what makes sense in comic books? Anything can make sense. So, I'm definitely looking forward to whatever happens there, you know.
For sure.
But, all right. Well, guys, let's tell everyone where they can find you, follow you, find the podcast when it comes out, and elevator pitch on the podcast if they don't know what it is.
Yeah, you want to give them the elevator pitch, and then I'll tell them where they can find us.
It started as one man's elaborate scheme to get his wife into X-Men comics. It obviously worked, as we are actively recording and producing episodes every week. We talk about the new comics, the current era. We occasionally dabble in some past comics, or we have an interesting interview guest here or there, or, you know, or sometimes we're just going to talk about what's going on here or there. Episodes, I try to get them out on Friday. Sometimes they don't come out until Saturday or Sunday. This week, Monday, you know. We bought a house recently, and stuff is crazy.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we got
yeah.
a lot of stuff going on.
But if you want to follow along on our journey, you can find us at the X-Wife Podcast. That's THEXWIFE, as in X-Men, not former wife. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want to check out my cosplay, you can follow me at Wilder Moves. I do a lot of X-Men cosplay.
We are on Twitter for as long as Twitter exists.
I'm sorry, it's not even called Twitter anymore.
X.
We're on X.
It, which is even fits your motif even better.
Right.
You guys,
it's funny how much X Twitter is like, all right, no, we're good.
Yeah,
we're
out. I'm out.
Well, guys, everyone, go listen to the podcast. If you like comic books, the X-Men, do it. If you don't, listen to it anyway. You might learn something. You might find you like the X-Men. You might find it's just a fun listen. So check it out. New episodes every Friday-ish. And follow them on Instagram. Check out the cosplay. And that's it, guys. Well, thank you very much again for coming on. I'm glad we could talk about the next era. And then whatever happens next, we'll do it again. And see where we're sitting on the next big explosion that happens.
Yes.
However this all shakes out.
Yeah, the check-ins are good and they're fun. We always love hanging out with you, so thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. All right, guys, well, we're going to get out of here for this week. For Social Hour, I've been Deese, and for the Ex-Wife Podcast, for Justin and Alicia, thank you very much. And we will see you all next week.